"Anything happening here?" I said. "Not much," Swan said. "Some helicopter guy went shopping in Heidelberg and got run over. And Kramer died, of course. That's shaking things up some."
"Who's next in line?"
"Basil, I guess."
"I met him," I said. "Wasn't impressed."
"It's a poison chalice. Things are changing. You should hear these guys talk. They're real gloomy."
"The status quo is not an option," I said. "That's what I'm hearing." His phone rang. He listened for a minute and put it down.
"Marshall's not on post," he said. "He's out on a night exercise in the countryside, back in the morning."
Summer glanced at me. I shrugged.
"Have dinner with me," Swan said. "I'm lonely here with all these cavalry types. The O Club in an hour?"
We carried our bags over to the visiting officers' quarters and found our rooms. Mine looked pretty much the same as the one Kramer had died in, except it was cleaner. It was a standard American motel layout. Presumably some hotel chain had bid for the government contract way back when. Then they had air freighted all the fixtures and fittings, right down to the sinks and the towel rails and the toilet bowls. I shaved and took a shower and dressed in clean BDUs. Knocked on Summer's door 55 minutes into Swan's hour. She opened up. She looked clean and fresh. Behind her, the room looked the same as mine, except it already smelled like a woman's. There was some kind of nice eau de toilette in the air. We found the O Club without any trouble. It occupied half of one of the ground floor wings of the main building. It was a grand space with high ceilings and intricate plaster moldings. There was a lounge and a bar and a dining room. We found Swan in the bar. He was with a lieutenant colonel who was wearing Class A's with a combat infantryman's badge on the coat. It was an odd thing to see on an armored post. His nameplate said Simon. He introduced himself to us. I got the feeling he was going to join us for dinner. He told us he was a liaison officer, working on behalf of the infantry. He told us there was an armored guy down in Heidelberg doing the same job in reverse.
"Been here long?" I asked him.
2 years, he said,
which I was glad about. I needed some background, and Swan didn't have it any more than I knew anything about Fort Byrd. Then I realized it was no accident that Simon was joining the party. Swan must have figured out what I wanted and set about providing it without being asked. Swan was that kind of a guy.
"Pleased to meet you, Colonel," I said. And then I nodded to Swan like I was saying thanks.
We drank cold American beers from tall frosted glasses, and then we went through to the dining room. Swan had made a reservation. The steward put us at a table in the corner. I sat where I could watch the whole room at once. I didn't see anyone I knew. Vassal wasn't around, nor was Coomer. The menu was absolutely standard. We could have been in any O Club in the world. O Clubs aren't there to introduce you to local cuisine. They're there to make you feel at home, somewhere deep inside the Army's own interpretation of America. There was a choice of fish or steak. The fish was probably European, but the steak would have been flown in across the Atlantic. Some politician in one of the ranch states would have leveraged a sweet deal with the Pentagon. We small-talked for a spell. We bitched about pay and benefits, talked about people we knew. We mentioned Just Cause and Panama. Lieutenant Colonel Simon told us he'd been to Berlin 2 days previously and had gotten himself a chip of concrete from the wall. Told us he planned to have it encased in a plastic cube, planned to hand it on down the generations, like an heirloom.
"Do you know Major Marshall?" I asked him.
"Fairly well," he said.
"Who is he exactly?" I asked.
"Is this official?"
"Not really," I said.
"He's a planner, a strategist, basically. Long-term kind of guy. General Kramer seemed to like him. Always kept him close by, made him his intelligence officer."
"Does he have an intelligence background?"
"Not formally, but he'll have done rotations, I'm sure."
"So is he a part of the inner team? I heard Kramer and Vassal and Coomer mentioned all in the same breath, but not Marshall."
"He's on the team," Simon said. "That's for sure. But you know what flag officers are like. They need a guy, but they aren't about to admit it. So they abuse him a little. He fetches and carries and drives him around. But when push comes to shove, they ask his opinion.
Is he going to move up now Kramer's gone? Maybe into Coomer's slot?
Simon made a face.
He should. He's an Arma fanatic to the core, like the rest of them. But nobody really knows what the hell's going to happen. Kramer dying couldn't have come at a worse time for them.
The world is changing, I said.
And what a world it was, Simon said. Kramer's world, basically, beginning to end. He graduated the point in 52, and places like this one were all buttoned up by 53, and they've been the center of the universe for almost 40 years. These places are so dug in you wouldn't believe it. You know who's done the most in this country?
Who?
Not armored. Not the infantry. This theater is all about the Army Corps of Engineers. Sherman tanks way back weighed 38 tons and were 9 feet wide. Now we're all the way up to the M1A1 Abrams, which weighs 70 tons and is 11 feet wide. Every step of the way for 40 years, the Corps of Engineers has had work to do. They've widened roads, hundreds of miles of them, all over West Germany. They've strengthened bridges. Hell, they've built roads and bridges. Dozens of them. You want a stream of 70-ton tanks rolling east to battle, you better make damn sure the roads and bridges can take it.
Okay, I said.
Billions of dollars, Simon said. And, of course, they knew which roads and bridges to look at. They knew where we were starting, and they knew where we were going. They talked to the war gamers, they looked at the maps, and they got busy with the concrete and the rebar. Then they built way stations everywhere we needed them. Permanent, hardened fuel stores, ammunition dumps, repair shops, hundreds of them, all along strictly predetermined routes. So we're embedded here, literally. We're dug in, literally. The Cold War battlefields are literally set in stone, Reacher.
People are going to say we invested and we won.
Simon nodded.
And they'd be correct. But what comes next?
More investment, I said.
Exactly, he said. Like in the Navy, when the big battleships were superseded by aircraft carriers. The end of one era, the beginning of the next. The Abrams tanks are like battleships. They're magnificent, but they're out of date. About the only way we can use them is down custom-built roads in directions we've already planned to go.
They're mobile, Summer said, like any tank.
Not very mobile, Simon said. Where's the next fight gonna be?
I shrugged. I wish Joe was there. He was good at all the geopolitical stuff. The Middle East, I said. Iran or Iraq, maybe. They've both gotten their breath back. They'll be looking for the next thing to do.
Oh, the Balkans, Swan said. When the Soviets finally collapse, there's a 45-year-old pressure cooker waiting for the lid to come off.
Okay, Simon said. Look at the Balkans, for instance. Yugoslavia, maybe. That'll be the first place anything happens, for sure. Right now, they're just waiting for the starting gun. What do we do?
Send in the airborne, Swan said.
Okay, Simon said again. We send in the 82nd and the 101st, lightly armed. We might get 3 battalions there inside a week. But what do we do after we get there? We're speed bumps, that's all, nothing more. We have to wait for the heavy units. And that's the first problem. An Abrams tank weighs 70 tons. Can't airlift it. Gotta put it on a train, and then put it on a ship. And that's the good news. Because you don't just ship the tank.
For every ton of tank, you have to ship 4 tons of fuel and other equipment. These suckers get a half mile to the gallon. And you need spare engines, ammunition, huge maintenance crews. The logistics tail is a mile long, like moving an iron mountain. To ship enough tank brigades to make a worthwhile difference, you're looking at a 6-month buildup, minimum. And that's working right around the clock.
During which time the airborne troops are deep in the shit, I said.
Tell me about it, Simon said. And those are my boys, and I worry about them. Lightly armed paratroops against any kind of foreign armor, we'd get slaughtered. It would be a very, very anxious 6 months. And it gets worse. Because what happens when the heavy brigades eventually get there? What happens is they roll off the ships and they get bogged down 2 blocks later. Roads aren't wide enough, bridges aren't strong enough, they never make it out of the port area. They sit there stuck in the mud and watch the infantry getting killed far away in the distance.
Nobody spoke.
Let's take the Middle East, Simon said. We all know Iraq wants Kuwait back. Suppose they go there. Long term, it's an easy win for us, because the open desert is pretty much the same for tanks as the steppes in Europe, except it's a little hotter and dustier. The war plans we've got will work out just fine. But do we even get that far? We've got the infantry sitting there like tiny little speed bumps for 6 whole months. Who says the Iraqis won't roll right over them in the first 2 weeks?
Air power, Summer said. Attack helicopters.
I wish, Simon said. Planes and whirlybirds are sexy as hell, but they don't win anything on their own. Never have, never will. Boots on the ground is what wins things.
I smiled. Part of that was a combat infantryman's standard-issue pride. But part of it was true, too.
So what's going to happen, I said. Same thing has happened with the Navy in 1941, Simon said. Overnight, battleships were history and carriers were the new thing. So for us, now, we need to integrate. We need to understand that our light units are too vulnerable and our heavy units are too slow. We need to ditch the whole light-heavy split. We need integrated rapid response brigades with armored vehicles lighter than 20 tons and small enough to fit in the belly of a C-130. We need to get places faster and fight smarter. No more planning for set-piece battles between herds of dinosaurs.
Then he smiled.
Basically, we'll have to put the infantry in charge, he said.
You ever talk to people like Marshall about this kind of stuff?
Their planners? No way.
What do they think about the future?
I have no idea, and I don't care. The future belongs to the infantry.
Dessert was apple pie, and then we had coffee. It was the usual excellent brew. We slid back from the future into present-day small talk. The stewards moved around silently. Just another evening in an officer's club 4,000 miles from the last one.
Marshall will be back at dawn, Swan told me. Look for a scout car at the rear of the first incoming column.
I nodded. Figured dawn in January in Frankfurt would be about 0700 hours. I set my mental alarm for 6. Lieutenant Colonel Simon said goodnight and wandered off. Summer pushed her chair back and sprawled in it, as much as a tiny person can sprawl. Swan sat forward with his elbows on the table.
"You think they get much dope on this post?" I asked him.
"You want some?" he said.
"Brown heroin," I said, "not for my personal use."
Swan nodded.
"Guys here say they're Turkish guest workers in Germany who could get you some. One of the speed dealers could supply it, I'm sure."
"You ever meet a guy called Willard?" I asked him.
"What, the new boss?" he said. "Yeah, I got the memo. Never met him. But some of the guys here know him. He was an intelligence wonk, something to do with armor."
"He wrote algorithms," I said.
"For what?"
"Soviet T-80 fuel consumption, I think. Told us what kind of training they were doing."
"And now he's running the 110th?
I nodded.
"I know," I said. "Bizarre."
"How did he do that?"
"Well, obviously someone liked him."
"We should find out who," Start sending hate mail.
I nodded again. Nearly a million men in the army, hundreds of billions of dollars, and it all came down to who liked who.
Hey, what can you do?